Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Video streaming live and broadcasting from our studios in New York City, so we welcome everyone. Today, this is our Empowerment Hour. This is the hour where we take on a lot of hard-hitting topics. As always, we begin with the latest cutting-edge information from peer-reviewed literature on the science of health and healing. Five amazing healing benefits of honey. And which are the best honey? Chemotherapy and radiation. Do you know they actually can make your cancer more malignant? We'll get to that. Also, a more in-depth analysis today of our superfoods. And today I'm selecting blueberries. They're in season, they're healthy, and I'll tell you what science has found out about them. Also, from our commentary section today, two short ones. The first, becoming a third world country. Yes, we are. Never know it, however, based upon what the media covers and who they don't cover. As many of you know, I've returned from 2 years of going around everywhere, in small towns and suburbs, large cities, talking with just regular people. Not the old poor, these are the new poor, frequently college graduates. One example, a woman who had worked for 27 years in an office, was rather conservative financially, and then ended up having her job outsourced to a person from India at half her pay, and none of her benefits, completely legal. And as you know, listening to this program, there's 8.4 million such imported jobs of highly skilled, and don't blame them. They're just looking for work for themselves and their families. They went to school. They studied hard. My issue is not against them and their right to a livelihood. My issue is against the fact that we then encourage Americans to get a good education, to work hard, to play by the rules. And when they do, and once they finally have 10, 20 years in a place and they've developed some seniority, we come in and say, you know that $100,000 a year job? Well, we have someone from India who's equally qualified, but they're going to work for $45,000 without being in a union, without any seniority, without any. And it's not a few thousand we're talking about. We have more Americans losing their jobs to highly qualified, highly skilled, and highly educated people on the special visa program than we have people coming illegally across the borders each year. Yet one becomes the sole focus and the other doesn't. Why? Because whose corporations and law firms are bringing this in? The people also don't want the illegals coming across the border. Such hypocrisy. So here's a woman now. She unfortunately waited too long to try to sell her house. She thought surely she'd get another job. She couldn't. She didn't. She was paying two daughters' college educations at a good school. Both were good schools. She didn't ask her daughters to help out. She felt surely, because of her conservative savings, that she would weather it. After all, her parents weathered the Great Depression. 2.5 years later, nobody wanted to hire her. Who's going to hire a highly paid, experienced, nearly 60-year-old woman? Very few people. Not just because of age bias and discrimination, but because of the reality of the marketplace, when there's so many people willing to show up to work for minimum wage. So then she ended up losing her home. Her kids had to drop out of college. She lost all of her savings. And now she doesn't have Social Security and she doesn't have benefits. She has nothing. So where does she go each day? Well, she goes down, and she had to acknowledge, and you'll see it in the film, that she has done some dumpster diving. But she likes to do it discreetly when no one's around. And she still goes to church, but she did not want to acknowledge the people in the church where she used to donate food and work and serving people, that she goes there to donate her time, but really it's also because she needs to eat. How many of them are there like her? How many people from 55 to 75 are financially, literally, to the brink? The most conservative estimates I have are 16 million senior citizens and 35 million people over 50. who are stressed. Now, that's certainly enough people. That's more than all the population of California or New York, that if they were together, they would make a formidable group. Who's advocating on their behalf? How about no one? I remember pulling into a park. I went to a Walmart. I stood outside the Walmart, and I wanted to see who was shopping there and what they were buying and why. And I asked one of the people, I said, where do the homeless people go around here? He said, well, you can't see any homeless people in our town. I said, why not? The city council and the mayor and the police don't allow it. They keep shooing people off. And she said, but there is a place that you can go, and generally people are there because it's out of town about 5 miles and you don't see them. They're off the road. So I went there. And the first thing I noticed when I pulled up, and there were several hundred cars in this wooded area, was that there was a pretty nice looking SUV. I believe it was a Cadillac Escalade, but about a 2002 model. And as I walk by the car, and I see that the hood's open, and I see four people. I see a man and woman. I'm assuming that they're husband and wife, and two teenagers. And when I looked at what they were doing, they turned around and I said, I'm here as your friend. You know, I'm not the enemy. So they said, okay, and they went back. They were boiling some noodles for their meal. Damn, that pissed me off. Oh. So you can maybe accept the fact that there are some of us who really give a about the American public, but our president doesn't, no one in Congress does, no one in our... I can't tell you the contempt I have for the media, for the dilettantes in the left and the right, for the people who refuse to see the truth of what's happening in America. But we right now are in massive collective denial of our real problems, their causes, or solutions. But go in my shoes. Come where I am. I'm not Rachel Maddow. I'm not playing it safe. I'm not getting a multi-million-dollar salary. I work for free for here because I want to know the truth and share it. I'm not an ideologue. I don't believe in political ideologies. I believe in ideas. At the end of the day, the idea will carry us. The ideology will cripple us. So why don't you go and talk with the millions of men and women who are eating cat food because they can't afford human food, and who sleep in one room in the winter because they can't afford the heat in the rest of the house, and who are lonely and committing suicide. Do you know that there was a 500% increase in the people between 40 and 45 committing suicide? The X generation, they've given up. Why isn't that an issue? Why isn't senior citizen poverty an issue? Why isn't 18 million hungry children an issue? Why isn't the degradation of our environment an issue? Why is the over-industrial militarization of the world an issue? Why aren't anything important issues? Instead, he looks good, doesn't he? Look at that tie. Look at his hair. He looks nice. Yeah. Okay, we can all agree upon that. But what does he do? What do any of them do? And that's why my commentary today will address this. If you've been listening, then yesterday you heard me differentiate the difference between spirituality and religion as a motivating factor for different groups, the baby boomers, their children, and our grandparents. Today I'm going to take us on a little journey in commentary on happiness. My guest in the second part of our program today will be Rocky Anderson. Now, many of you know who Rocky Anderson is. He is a presidential candidate for the new National Justice Party, which he was instrumental in founding. He is the former two-term mayor of Salt Lake City, having served from 2000 to 2008, and he's the executive director for the organization High Road for Human Rights. And prior to entering politics, he practiced law in Utah for 21 years and was listed among the best lawyers in America. A former member of the Democratic Party, he left over its evisceration of the Constitution and it having morphed into a poor alternative to the GOP. At present, the justice is rapidly getting on the ballot in many states, more recently in Connecticut, New Jersey. The website is Justice Party USA. I'm going to ask him to speak to us not as a politician, but as a human being on the issues that he sees, honestly and frankly, because this is the largest independent progressive audience on radio anywhere. So let's Let's hear what he has to say and see if he aligns with what we see the future being, not just this election cycle. I see the real movement coming in the next election cycle when all the people who are running on important principles now join together, lock arms and say we all have good ideas. Let us surrender the ego and work for a better world. And then 51% of the American independents will come forward and make it a better world. Now, let's begin with the latest on health and healing. And by the way, my documentary, I'm not sure how I'm going to edit it yet. It is so massive, I may have to do it as an internet series of 52 one-hour specials. I have thousands of hours filmed. And the whole causes of our problems is far more complicated than some problems with the housing market. Let us begin. I believe that one of the best ways of dealing with any healthcare program is to prevent the disease in the first place. But to prevent a disease, we have to first know what contributes to a disease. And if we are sick, what are the best modalities for reversing it or improving it? And left out almost of everyone's protocols today is honey. Well, raw, organic, unheated honey is quite simply one of nature's most perfect foods. It would have to go up on my list of the 10 most perfect foods. And it's the oldest medicine ever used, and it's the only food that never goes bad. Here are some things you should know. The five amazing healing honey facts. And I want to thank Sayer G. from Green Med Info for sharing this with me. First, for all of you who want a good probiotic, it is the food that feeds good bacteria. Now, it's a little known fact that the bees have a diverse population of beneficial lactic acid bacteria in their honey crop. And the bulge between the esophagus and the gizzard of the bee is where it's stored. In fact, according to newly published research out of PLOS, quote, studies of lab in all extant honeybee species plus related apid bee reveal one of the largest collections of novel species of a lactobacillus and bifidus ever discovered within a single insect and suggests a long history of association, end quote. In lay language, raw honey feeds good bacteria. That's good. In fact, it actually has up to 100 times more than other sources. It also fights the bad bacteria. Now, you're familiar with MRSA, M-R-S-A. That's a very bad antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Honey eradicated MRSA infections, and that's been reported in the medical literature for well over a decade. And that's MRSA is an acronym for methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. It produces a biofilm, which makes it especially resistant to conventional antimicrobial agents. So honey, raw, organic, unheated honey, Manuka would be my first choice, Tupelo my second choice, orange blossom my third choice. Anyhow, it's effective at killing biofilm associated with MRSA isolates, and that means that you have a chance. Then also, it kills dental plaque causing bacteria. Manuka honey, Manuka, M-A-N-U-K-A, that's a special honey produced by the flowers of the Manuka plant grown in New Zealand and Australia. It has been shown at least as effective as the chemical, which is a chlorhexidine gluconate, often used in mouthwash in reducing plaque formation as a mouthwash. And also, it is superior to any of the known pharmaceuticals in killing herpes. You heard me right. Just read Medical Science Monitor. It shows that topical honey was far superior to the drug Aclavor, trade name Zovirix, in treating both the lip and the genital herpes lesions. Quote, this is from the study, for labial herpes, the mean duration of attacks and pain, occurrence of crusting, and mean healing time with honey treatment was 43% better, respectively, than the chemical treatment. For genital herpes, the mean duration of attacks and pain, occurrence of crusting, and mean healing time with honey was 59% better. And finally, it protects against gastric damage. It's been shown to prevent alcohol or aspirin-induced lesions. So let's just start using that because it works. And I suggest taking some green tea, white tea, black tea, oolong tea. Remember, they're all coming from the same tea leaf. If you've ever visited India, and it's worth visiting if you haven't, just to see how they exist. And such the difference between those who live in absolute splendor and those who live absolute in poverty, literally side by side. Then you get into the country, and especially the wonderful rolling hills in central and northern India, a lot of the tea is grown. And you think, where's your green tea bush and your black tea? But well, they're all the same. It's how they're treated afterwards that determines what their name is. In any case, I suggest having between 200 to 400 milligrams of tea, green tea, with 1 teaspoon of Manuka honey in the morning. And the juice of 2 lemons, squeeze it right in there. And that's a delicious, healing, powerful way to start the day. As we know, we have had a 45 official year war on cancer. The trouble is, we have failed miserably. Most of the improvements have been in either the small number of testicular cancers or leukemias, and that represents under 12% of all cancers. For the rest, there's been no major improvement except in lifestyle modification and prevention. Less people smoking, more people paying attention to their diet. This is a comment from Sayer Jai. Quote, cancer is the second leading cause of death in the developed world, and yet we are still in the dark ages when it comes to treating and understanding it. The colossal failure of the conventional cancer treatments reflects a fundamental misunderstanding of what cancer, the enemy, actually is. For me, chemotherapy and radiation are both intrinsically carcinogenic treatments. By the way, he's absolutely correct. There's over 2,000 articles in the cancer peer-reviewed literature showing that both chemotherapy treatments and radiation themselves are carcinogenic. They cause cancer. The only justification for their use, in fact, is that they are highly effective at damaging the DNA within cells with the hope that the cancer cells will be more susceptible to being harmed than the healthy ones around them. By the way, the ratio is about 1 to 100,000, meaning for every cancer cell you kill, you're killing 100,000 good cells. The reality, however, is that, quote, the collateral damage from treatment is inevitable. It is not a matter of if, but to what degree the damaging side effects will occur. As in real modern warfare, the decision to strike is often based upon decisions how much collateral damage to civilian populations is deemed acceptable. This is not unlike the fixation in toxicological risk assessment for drugs, environmental pollutants, food additives, etc., where determining the acceptable level of harm, a rather horrible oxymoron, is to the exposed population is the first order of business. The DNA damaging or genomic of toxic effects of chemotherapy and radiation, according to the prevailing wisdom, are the number one cause of cancer initiation and promotion. This is known as the mutational theory of cancer and has been the dominant explanation for half a century. Therefore, it is absolutely disconcerting that the standard of care in cancer treatment today is still the use of genotoxic agents versus substances that are actually effective in killing the bad cells, leaving the good ones intact, which are also known as selective cytotoxicity, and is the property characteristic of a natural anti-compound, such as your cruciferous vegetables. In fact, there's a fruit-derived compound, such as graviola, where research indicates that fruit extract may be 10,000 times more effective at killing certain cancer cells versus adriamycin, and is highly selective in which cells it kills. Take the cancer drug tamoxifen, for example. It is classified by the World Health Organization and the American Cancer Society as a human carcinogen and has been documented to cause over 24 health-destroying side effects, and yet it is still being used as a first line of treatment for certain types of breast cancer. Does that really make sense? Even if tamoxifen was effective, which increasingly it is not, does it really matter if it cures breast cancer only to cause endometrial or liver cancer, for which it is more deadly and the person dies as a direct result of the treatment? Tamoxifen and chemotherapy resistance is increasingly a problem in the same way that certain pathogenic bacteria become resistant to antibiotics, even becoming stronger after being challenged with drugs. And then it goes on to talk about how radiation causes cancer as well. And then it talks about why traditional therapies are failing. Now, some of you probably are aware that I wrote the first independent, nationally published articles in the Politics of Cancer in 1976, 77, right up through 1998. It became a very popular series. It was picked up by 60 Minutes with a special on Dr. Lawrence Burton and an Emmy Award-winning show on Dr. Stanislav Berzinski. But what it did, it opened the door. And from that, Gabe Pressman and many other people, Peter Barry Chalk and a lot of others, came through and then did additional articles. But nothing changed. The paradigm did not shift when it saw that it was limited or weak or wrong. What has happened is instead other therapies have come about that are natural, non-toxic, but the best therapy of all is one that prevents the disease. So when you get rid of the red meat and you get rid of the dairy and the gluten and the sugars and the artificial sweeteners, when you get rid of the sodas and the caffeine and you start eating an intelligent diet like a Mediterranean diet or the six major diets around the world from Crete, from Okinawa, from Japan, they all have the same thing in common. They're lots of fermented foods, lots of raw foods, lots of grains, beans, nuts, seeds, legumes, vegetables, and herbs. What's so complicated? There is no complication in eating healthy because millions of people do it every day and live a long life and they're a living testament to it. But that's not what sells. I can assure you, if there was a way to make money off lettuce, then you would see lettuce restaurants everywhere in America. But there isn't. But there's a way to make money off beef and chicken and barbecued ribs and pizza. So follow the money trail and you'll follow the commodification and commercialization of food. Follow that and you follow the trail of disease. Follow that and you see the treatment for the disease, which causes iatrogenic side effects. And then follow that and you see injury and death. Follow all of that and you end up with a healthcare program that doesn't prevent any disease, doesn't really help anyone with the disease, and it's only going to create more death and harm in those people, but there's a lot of money to be made. How much? Approximately $3 trillion a year. You think that maybe we ought to have some independent minds talking about what real health is in America? We should, but we won't. Why? Because these are people going to say, why do we have an epidemic of adult 2 diabetes in children? Why are many of the children born today going to die before their parents? And someone's going to say, well, clearly it has to do with their diet. Well, then why don't we change the diet? In the school program, change what we sell people? Why can't we promote healthy food? And the answer is, you're kidding. No, I'm not kidding. I don't complicate a solution that is simple with a convolution of the problem. And we shouldn't separate them. Solutions are easy. Prevention is easy. It is when we refuse to acknowledge that we have to surrender something that we've gotten used to, including surrendering campaign money. Who are the largest contributors in any campaign, state or federal or local? It's always those people who need to keep unregulated or minimally regulated or have undue power in the marketplace. So McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola and others belong to ALEC, and ALEC then gets together with your state legislators and creates the laws, 860 laws. Those laws then you think were created by concerned citizens who went to the state legislators to sacrifice careers in order to protect you. Wrong. And then ALEC has its own national policies through the Chamber of Commerce and then through the Business Roundtable. And one day you wake up and virtually everything in your life has been gamed. The system is played against us. So how do we change this? The moment you say no to Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, the day you say no to Fox TV, MSNBC TV, and NPR TV, the first time that you say no to something that is sponsored by someone who pollutes the environment, undermines our life, exploits human labor, the day that you look at the label on your clothes before you buy them, make sure you're buying fair trade or a living wage work, the moment you say, I'm not going to buy something I don't need to create debt I shouldn't have, the moment you realize your American dream is your nightmare, but it's their dream when you bought into what life should be, nothing more than a series of collections and possessions. You tear up their credit card, you take your money out of their bank, and most importantly, stop voting Democrat and Republican. Now, if you were a Franklin Roosevelt Democrat, a true liberal, an ethical person, if you were a true Eisenhower Republican with family and conservative values, yes to both sides. But they both morphed into a corporate Democrat and corporate Republican. All you have to do is look what they've created. So the solution to living a longer and healthier life is relatively easy. Being willing to change our perception, which control our belief system, is the challenge. So any movement that expects people to change based upon the truths of what they see in exploitation, of becoming a militarized police state, an intrusive, constitutional-violating entity, will never have any success until we bring in the behavioralist, the humanistic psychologist, the Rabbi Michael Lerner, and others who have an understanding of human nature and say, friends, stop for a moment and take a look how we're living. Is it really in our best interest or their best interest? Making it believe they have our interest at stake. Those are my thoughts, and I'm going to open the forum up for a moment for yours after I give my commentary. I'll hold my thoughts until Sunday night on my talkback, which is a whole hour on nutrition about blueberries. Now, before we go to our guest, which we've run about 8 minutes now for the remainder of the show, I want to continue what I started yesterday. And if you didn't have a chance to hear yesterday's program, because I had a pre-record on BAI, but I was live on Progressive Radio, you can go to our archives and listen to it. I want to pick up where I left off. I believe that we have to take this a little further than what we have in the past. Let's just look at happiness. I've said many times, you cannot be healthy if you're not happy. It's not possible. So adhering to a strict diet, exercising every day, if you don't have happiness in that equation, you're not going to sustain it, and you're also going to be working against yourself, because the harder you drive yourself to some sort of artificial sense of perfection, the more you lose a sense of how vulnerable we are to living authentically. What does it mean to live authentic life? There are several factors that contribute to our development from childhood into adulthood and ultimately into determining how well we will fulfill our individual purpose in life. Two of these factors are most important and frequently play a tug of war with each of us. One is our individual energy, a birthright that we are born with when we emerge into this world. It includes all of the child's latent talents and skills, and if nurtured consciously, will allow the child to blossom and live a productive and healthy life. The other, which is more important for our discussion, is the conditioning we absorb from our environment, which includes our parents and family members, our schools, and our culture. This includes not only the verbal lessons that children are given and the actions they witness, but also the energy, the positive and negative energy, that they absorb from their environment. For this reason, it's not unusual to see a frantic child accompanied by a frantic parent. Last year, I had a conversation with Professor Talbin Shayer, a Harvard professor of positive psychology whose courses in happiness are the most popular on Harvard's campus. The professor estimates that 94% of all college students in America today are overly stressed and unhappy at their core. If true, I believe he is correct, by the way, this is a frightening statistic. Young people today have been conditioned by the pressures of their baby boomer parents and by the onslaught of mass media and advertising to achieve a vision of success that is nothing more than an allusion to the deities of wealth and possessions. Moreover, they are taught that only aggressive competition combined with distrust towards anyone other than oneself is the means for reaching this goal. Now, today, happiness is sorely limited to whether you have more than your neighbor. However, if we consider the statistics that only 6% of young adults today are authentically happy, then what are they doing with the rest of their energy? They're being distracted. We have mastered the art of manipulating people into thinking that so many square foot of a house, the advantage of a certain car, the sex appeal of our clothing and hairstyle makes us who we are, something to covet. We become what we covet. That means that we are living lives of distraction and sublimation. Maybe I'm wrong, but let's challenge me. How many people smoke? That's sublimation. How many people drink? How many people take medications like anti-anxiety pills? How many people gamble? How many people work frantically? How many people are obsessive in their needs? The majority of people. That means the number one industry, if it were an industry in the United States, would be sublimation. Why can't we have a national dialogue on why we're unhappy? Well, because then we'd show who was responsible for unhappiness. Then we'd have to point fingers everywhere, including back at ourselves. Well, what would that mean? It would mean the people we've given power over the decisions in our lives would be responsible for how we end up the messes we are today. We can be highly literate. Last night I went to a play. Most people won't see it. It's a little tiny play on West 43rd Street. Mary Broom. They took an old 19th century setting in England and gave wonderful insight and wit to it. It's as cutting and relevant as anything happening today about the dysfunctions in a family. And then you realize it was written then and updated today. It means that historically, dysfunction has always existed. Conflict has always existed. Power plays has always existed. Always. It's not something new today. We didn't just invent it. And yet we think we have. And what's important is when we put all of our faith in our government, our corporations, our educational systems, the gurus, the faith communities, we ignore the important issues of improving the essential quality of our lives. Our entire media world of talking heads is mostly populated by unhappy, disgruntled individuals who are seeking to make themselves feel more relevant based upon their popularity and their audience size. How many times have we had to hear Bill O'Reilly talk about, you know, he's the number one 2.2 million people. Well, okay, Bill, you got 2.2 million people watching you on Fox. We got 312 million people, Bill. So you got, what, 0.3%? So maybe when you put yourself in front of a projector in a drive-in movie theater and you project upon a 60-foot high screen, you look big. Turn off the lights, Bill. It's a really tiny audience. And how many of them are empowered? They're waiting for you, Bill. You're their power. So what does that tell you about your audience, Bill? Disempowered people, Rush Limbaugh's disempowered people, what are they waiting for? They're just waiting for you to act out. And when you no longer do what they need, they'll find someone else. And if you doubt me, ask Oprah how it feels to be today without an audience, without a network. Oh, yeah. There's an insightful saying of the Buddha. Thousands of candles can be lighted from a single candle, and the life of the candle will not be shortened. Happiness never decreases by being shared. But the Buddha is speaking about a happiness only found in a place of contentment within ourselves. Buddha's only possessions were his robes and a begging bowl. All the possessions we own, including all the speculative assets that we have amassed, and all of the titles, all of our clothes. And then one day we look and it's all changing, it's decaying. So we're frantic, we're angry, we're desperate. Because we thought once we owned something, it was ours. It would always be there, our friends, our family, our pets, our neighborhood. And then they start to die, they become less. Then we don't realize the responsibility of maintaining something. Just think of how many baby boomers now maintaining their parents because they're going into senility or Alzheimer's. And now when they do have a chance to live their own lives, maybe live the dream they didn't earlier, they can't give up the responsibilities. And that's where we're at today. All the possessions we own have a life expectancy and an expiration date. They will all decay. Imagine the stress and fear of all the families who are losing their homes from foreclosures. Instead of looking at this as a good thing, surrendering the unnecessary and compounding debts and interest, and being able to be free to live somewhere, and I'm suggesting people buy an RV. You're free. Great country. Beautiful country. It's amazing when you're critical of the political system or the corporate interests that oversee it, you're suddenly deemed un-American. To the contrary, The real patriots in America are those who have the courage to stand up and say what is wrong and what the solutions are. We have no shortage of solutions or wonderful people who can provide them, but none of them happen to be in positions of power. So even for suggesting, look honestly in the mirror, sir, because you will see something that's monstrous looking back. You will have had no qualms about overspending and misadventures, and you have no interest in feeding 18 million hungry American children. Who then is an American? Those of us who are trying to feed those children, feed. You want to see the checks I wrote last week, sir? Mr. President, I wrote two checks from my personal account to homeless veterans who are starving to death without anything on their side, including you or your corrupt Defense Department, your corrupt agency. When did your check go to them? I asked them, when was Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck and the other absolute hypocrites down here to help you? And they just looked at me and said, they haven't been. And that was just 16,000 homeless vets in just one area of Florida alone. We got 950,000. Oh, I forgot. They don't count. To talk about what's in their interest is un-American. To talk about what's in the interest of hungry children is un-American. To talk about what's in the interest of the poor and those who are being dispossessed is un-American. My God, what kind of image looks back at you each day, sir, when you look in the mirror? Are you so terrified that you have to surround yourself by sycophants and those who will collectively create an illusion? Because the truth would petrify any conscious person. In conclusion, let us not focus any longer in this foolish journey of living through their ideals, which are false, and their gods, which are non-existent, and their system of values, which are warped and perverse. Let us get back to something basic: our inalienable rights to happiness and peace and the security from our government and from those who now view us for standing up as an enemy of them. I'm Gary Nall. Those are my thoughts. I'm interested now in yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow. I feel nice. A sugar and spine. I feel nice. A sugar and spine. So nice. So nice. I got you. When I hold you in my arms, I know that I can't do no wrong. And when I hold you in my arms, my love won't do you no harm. And I feel nice, that sugar and spice. I feel nice, that sugar and spice.
What's his name?
So nice, so nice, I got you.
I'm Gary Nall. We're going to be taking some calls in a moment. Let me say hello to in-studio Rocky Anderson. Hi, Rocky.
Gary, great to be here.
I'm going to give you an extended overview. I'm going to then go quiet, as is I like to do, so you will have an uninterrupted forum to share your points of view, all right?
Great.
I watched a documentary last night about Barack Obama 2016. It's very popular. People are looking at it. And when I watched it, I thought, gee whiz, anyone at Fox could have written and directed this. It's a terrible, terrible piece of propaganda. But I also realized that the films that are pro and con each candidate are all propaganda. And we've limited our view of what is real to what is officially accepted. So no one in any of the debates, no one who is independent in their thought is invited to share anything that would challenge the pre-existing arguments. So they've so narrowly defined what we should be interested in, and nothing like the senior citizens who are hungry, there are over 12 million, the 18 million hungry children, the 100 million Americans who are going to be homeless or the 45 million who are homeless, the degradation of our environment, the enormous risk for offshore drilling, where they've never drilled as deep as they're now going to drill, and then what that could do, the actual effects of gas hydrofracking, the actual leakage out of nuclear power plants, the actual lack of support for, no support federally for geothermal. We have over 12,000 geothermal springs in the United States. We have had no real effort at wave energy, which, based upon the waves coming in from the Pacific and the Atlantic and the Gulf, could literally be used to handle all of America's energy needs. And yet, none of this is being discussed. So I'm interested in why it's not being discussed, what you would suggest on this. But here are my biggest issues. I'm concerned that there is no one in the mainstream media talking about the executive powers that Bush put in place and has been expanded on, where the President of the United States has the power to order assassination of American citizens suspected of terrorism and an extension of the Patriot Act on top of that without any due process. That's one. The increased surveillance and data collection. I'm going to be doing a commentary on Monday about the new technology that they now have. And if you go to Disney World and you go on a ride, they'll suddenly give you a picture of yourself. Now, you think I'm kidding. This is the truth. And you'll say, A, I didn't ask for a picture. And B, how did you know that's me? And how did you get my name and address and everything about me? They now have eye scanning and facial recognition through our National Security Agency, and they're trying to get it everywhere in America. So almost anywhere you go, every citizen will now have a complete identification. So if they deem you to be a suspect. Also on Monday, I'm going to deal with, you know, the people being locked up in psychiatric wards because they've written something that challenges the government on Facebook. Not terrorist. I'm just legitimate. How now they're using the rules of psychiatry and mental health to detain people who represent a political threat. The censorship and aggressive civil rights violations towards all whistleblowers. The entire stacking of our agricultural program with pro-big agri executives that promote GMO foods. The regressive energy policies, avoiding national regulation, no hydrofracking, pushing nuclear, the myth of clean coal, the tar sands pipeline, the Arctic drilling, the Obamacare. They reneged on single-payer coverage and created a program that favors insurers. They're following Europe's lead in pushing towards austerity policies without looking at what's happening to the citizens there. The Trans-Pacific Trade Pact, that's worse than NAFTA. The continued Bush administration's further isolation of the U.S. from the international community through the U.N., and continuing to expand the Cold War, creating a whole new Cold War with Russia and with China. And then they're expanding Obama's drone wars, and now they have 16,000 drones either in or scheduled for operation over the United States to look at us, we the American public. And also, they're opposed to all peace efforts within the UN for stabilizing international tensions. Those are the issues I'd like for you to address, if you would, please.
All right, Gary, and thank you for your statement earlier. These are issues that impact every one of us so dramatically. Let me tell you a little bit about myself and why I co-founded the Justice Party, why I decided to leave the Democratic Party, and why I've been so critical of both of the duopolist political parties, and why I'm running for president. Our nation is being transformed in front of our very eyes. And I think most people in this country have no idea how radical this transformation has become. When you mentioned the issue of executive powers, during the Bush and Obama years, and this has been a continuation under President Obama of this trend during the Bush years, to build up an imperial presidency that is unknown in our nation's history. Certainly there have been abuses of power in the executive branch, but always there was an aspiration to get back to our nation's fundamental values and principles. The founding fathers' commitment to due process, equal protection, the war power clause that left it solely within Congress's power and not the president to decide, given an analysis of the contemporaneous facts, whether our nation should go to war. We have seen such an amazing change with President Bush claiming to be the head of the unitary executive branch, and hence he wasn't restricted by the laws of Congress or by our Constitution. And yet it was the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that came out of the Church Committee hearings and the Rockefeller Commission under President Ford, when they took a look at all the abuses in the intelligence community during the Cold War, and they said, okay, we're going to get to the bottom of this, we're going to investigate it, we're going to disclose to the American people and to the world the abuses that took place, because that's the only way that we can make certain that these kinds of things don't happen in the future. And it was out of those findings about, for instance, the CIA engaging in wholesale letter opening of United States citizens, the FBI trying to blackmail Martin Luther King Jr. into committing suicide. So many of the, and they used information from warrantless wiretapping of Martin Luther King Jr. to do that. So many abuses. But the beautiful thing was, we had statespeople at the time in Congress and in the White House that said, this isn't what this nation's all about. This isn't Gulag Soviet Union. This is the United States of America. And we're going to disclose this, admit to our mistakes, and then deter this kind of misconduct in the future. President Nixon, after he was forced out of office because of his abuses of power and his illegal conduct, he said on the David Frost program shortly after he was forced to resign that, well, when the president does it, that means it's not illegal. And this nation uniformly was appalled that a former president of the United States could ever contend that anyone, especially the president of the United States, could hold himself above the law. But then along comes President Bush, and he claims this leadership of the unitary executive branch and the ability to surpass Congress's laws, even surpass the Constitution, surpass international law, because in his judgment, these things were the right things to do in this so-called war against terror. And I think there were a lot of us, Gary, that thought, okay, this is a painful time. We hope that there's accountability for this, but certainly things are going to get back on track, where the rule of law reigns supreme, where our Constitution reigns supreme, where no one can hold themselves above the law. And then we had a real clear sign about where President Obama was going to be when he became president on these issues. When he was in the Senate, the telecommunication companies that had cooperated with the Bush administration and its illegal surveillance program and had turned over private information, all of this a federal felony, every instance of it a federal felony. And they were threatened with criminal action. So because they had the money and the clout, once again, the rich and the powerful being part of this two-tiered system in our justice system, they put on their lobbying blitz. In one quarter alone, three telecommunication companies put in $12 million into this lobbying effort. And President Obama, when he was seeking Democratic nomination, said, I'm going to vote against it, and I will stand with those in a filibuster to block this legislation. And then he got the Democratic nomination. He not only didn't join the filibuster, he voted for the legislation. Retroactive immunity for criminal acts because these corporations were wealthy enough to buy off Congress. Then he comes into office and he's asked, so what are you going to do about the war criminals? Those people in the Bush administration that were responsible for torture. What are you going to do about those who violated the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and engaged in this consistent pattern over years of illegally spying on Americans' communications, tapping into our emails, tapping into our telephone conversations? President Obama, a lawyer, constitutional professor, he didn't say, in our nation, the rule of law reigns supreme. He said, as to these rich and powerful people, let's just look forward instead of looking backwards. Let's forget about the fact that they committed these egregious violations of the law. And then when there were calls for investigative committees like the Church Committee hearing, like the Rockefeller Commission, he said, no, we don't want to shake things up. He had his own political agenda. And so it was a complete undermining of the concept of the rule of law by the Obama administration. Complete contempt of these fundamental constitutional values. And then he continues this pattern. He targets United States citizens for assassination. There have been three United States citizens killed.
That you know of.
That we know of. One of them, Anwar al-Awlaki, was targeted. And those who read the newspapers probably know about that, although it wasn't the kind of headline news that should have been over the course of weeks in our major newspapers, because this was such a huge shift in what our government has done over the years. But Anwar al-Awlaki's 16-year-old U.S. citizen son, born in Denver, Colorado, was also taken out by an unmanned drone.
If we're going to talk for a moment, I just want to give you an opportunity to refocus on this part. Wouldn't you give credit to Obama for being smart enough to create the laws that are now making an action illegal, then become fully legal, even if they're unethical and immoral? And it wasn't not also true that virtually all of the horrendous injustices in Franco's Spain, in Mussolini's Italy, and in Hitler's Germany were all perfectly legal?
They made those outrages they made them legal. But the NDAA...
So can you see a difference at the existential level of looking around you and saying, now if you spied on Americans illegally and you should be held accountable, you're no longer accountable because we just changed the law. That's what the Obama and people did. And now if you're tortured under Bush, we're no longer going to make that illegal. So tortures and renditions no longer illegal. Now they're allowed to focus on anyone who goes onto a farm, a factory farm, and documents proof of animal cruelty and animal abuse.
That's right.
You, who did the documenting, become the criminal, and not just a criminal. You're now on a terrorist list. And once you're on a terrorist list, you can be arrested without any due recourse or process at all because you wanted to film something being done bad on a factory farm that endangered the public well-being from how the animals are treated. That was done under this administration. This president has taken more umbrage towards whistleblowers and all other American presidents combined as far as how many he's gone after.
Well, I was going to get to that because...
Okay. Please continue. And by the way, for those of you listening, I'm going to do something that needs to be done here. I'm going to go over this hour. I'm going to continue with Rocky Anderson until everything that we need to talk about is talked about. So I'm not going to limit this program today. And for those of you who generally listen to Danny Schechter, you can listen over the archives. Danny's out of the country today. He will be back soon from South Africa. We look forward to that return. But I have some important issues, and then we're going to get to everyone else on the phone. Every one of our phones are blasting off the hook. We're going to get to you, and others can call in. Now, I realize we're going down to the wire with some of our stations now. You can continue listening by just going to progressiveradionetwork.com, or here's a phone number to call. And from what I understand, some people can't get on it because there's 1.4 million minutes being listened to. A lot of people are listening, tens of thousands of people over the telephone, because you can listen anywhere in North America and can over the phone. 832-280-0066. 832-280-0066. So if some of the stations are saying goodbye, we're going to continue this conversation because I've got a lot to talk about, including my own critique of this Obama bashing film, and I'm not there to support Obama. I'm just showing you that how bad that game is being played, and how many people are going to walk out of a theater thinking what they just saw was real. And I will go through why nothing in that film was real. But now I'm wanting Rocky Anderson to give us his in-depth analysis. So now please do the following, if you will. Let's refocus. What do you say to a media that only reports upon a piece of legislation but never challenges the ethics of the legislation, where you make something that historically and in perpetuity had been a crime against humanity to be held accountable, and now we backtrack and retroactively make it not a crime? And now if you look at the 61 pieces of executive orders and legislation that have been passed just in this administration, almost any act confiscating your food, confiscating your water, confiscating your property, eminent domain for private corporations. By the way, this just happened down in Paris, Texas yesterday. A woman, her property was taken over by eminent domain, so a for-profit oil company could bring a line in there, and now she's going to have hydrofracking. Eminent domain was supposed to have been, as you know, as a lawyer, for the public good. You know, a park or something that would benefit all the people that was necessary. Now they've changed the laws through ALEC at the state level and through lobbyists at the federal level, so they can take your property, your water rights, your oil rights, your mineral rights for private for-profit corporations, always the ones who are the largest political campaign. So how do we deal with that? How do we deal with the fact that you are now on a terrorist list? Because you and all your supporters have spoken up without looking at the quality and integrity of what you said, you're now no better than on the FBI National Security Agency. You're a threat.
Well, you know, Gary, when I was mayor of Salt Lake City, I was the only big city mayor in the country calling for George Bush's impeachment. And we held rallies, huge demonstrations in Salt Lake City, the capital city of the state where President Bush had won by his largest percentage in both elections. And the Republican Party had radio campaigns calling into question my patriotism. You mentioned this in your opening remarks. I was the person, according to these folks, that wasn't supporting our troops. And yet I was calling for them to come back home, be taken out of harm's way, to be taken out of a situation where they were going to have to hurt a lot of people, and there were some million Iraqis who died as a result of our invasion and occupation of that country. And before that, a half million Iraqi children who died as a result of sanctions against the country, which Madeleine Albright said in a 60 Minutes program.
With Leslie Stahl, was it necessary?
No, she said it was worth the price.
Yeah. Unless, of course, it was her son or daughter.
So, under this administration, and this is what people need to take very seriously, because politics has become way too much of a team sport. It's this us and them phenomenon. As long as they're on your side, you're going to attribute all the positive aspects to them, like Democrats do with President Obama. Whereas if he were a Republican president, all holy hell would be breaking loose. Can you imagine a Republican president signing off on legislation that purported to allow the federal government to come out and kidnap you in the middle of the night, whisk you away to a prison, hold you indefinitely up to the rest of your life without a trial, without any charges being brought against you, without legal assistance, without the right of habeas corpus, I would challenge anybody. Show me a more anti-American subversive piece of legislation passed by a bipartisan Congress and signed off on by a Democratic president.
What is the one piece of the puzzle that you just left out? The motive.
Well,
why would Obama and this member, we're not talking about Obama. The president is an institution, meaning there are all these other people and special interest groups, the Council on Economic Advisers like Lawrence Summer that helped run the shock and all doctrine of the Russian independence, which caused about 90% of the country and Russia to go into deep poverty. All the people around these people, and you're talking about over 7,000 people around the president. So when you talk about Obama, don't talk about just the man. Talk about the institution.
Yeah, this isn't any one man. Right? Certainly he needs to ultimately be accountable.
But he is, because he's the one who proves those, and you don't see any progressives around him. You don't see independent thinkers around him. In any case, now, why are they passing so many draconian, literally militaristic police state laws? Who do they fear? The terrorists? Or the American public, or independent thinkers. There has to be a motive for this, and that's what hasn't been discussed.
They obviously fear the American people. They fear independent thinkers.
Those who they can't control.
They fear those who Teddy Roosevelt said were the real patriots, and those are the people who will pay attention and criticize, especially the President of the United States, because as Teddy Roosevelt said, if the president isn't doing right by this country and upholding American values, then it's servile and morally repugnant not to stand up in opposition to the president. But you're absolutely right. Look at who this president has surrounded himself with. On the financial side, the rape of Wall Street, of the American people, the same people that brought us the deregulation, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, the Commodity Futures Modernization Act of 2000, which, by the way, was signed off by President Clinton. This
Bill
has been
Clinton,
the Democrats
yeah.
and Republicans all along caving in to the desires of Wall Street so they can line their pockets. And then if things fall apart, they get bailed out and the American people get stiffed. We are seeing the fracturing of this nation between a very powerful, wealthy, small elite group of people that are holding almost all of the money. The top 1% holds 42% of the wealth in this country, and it gets worse every year. And the rest of the people that are held accountable under the law, oftentimes with a vengeance. Look at the war on drugs, these draconian drug laws. Weldon Angelus from Utah, 55 years sentence under the minimum mandatory sentencing structure set up by Congress because he was prosecuted under federal laws rather than state laws, 55 years for 3 marijuana sales. Because the informant who got charges against him dismissed when he came up with these claims said, oh, there was a gun present. Didn't say a gun was used against him. Doesn't say that Weldon even ever picked up a gun. One was lying there. So there was a 5-year enhancement for the first charge, 25 years for the second, and 25 for the third. Minimum mandatory. And the very conservative federal judge criticized it, said it was totally unjust, but his hands were tied. So that's what you see, the kind of justice that's rendered against ordinary people in this country when the war criminals, those who are illegally spying on Americans, and those who committed massive financial fraud leading up to the meltdown in 2008, and it continues to devastate people across the country, they're given a bye. They're being told, we're just going to look forward and not look back, and you're not going to be held accountable under the law. That is totally subversive to our constitutional republic.
I appreciate your answer and your in-depth analysis there. Thank you. In this film last night, the moderator, the producer, and it was very technically, it was very amateurish film. It's just terrible. As a filmmaker, I'm looking for, you know, I'm also looking to see what is happening. But he's showing beautiful big cities in Southeast Asia. You know, this is what, you know, you can look forward to with a globalization and free market because we're the ones who create these wonderful structures. And I thought, hold on a second. You come from India. You know what poverty is. Who owns those multi-billion dollar structures, two of the largest towers in the world with the, in Indonesia? What kind of military oppressive government do they have? How many people were in their prisons because they wanted to speak up? How many unions were busted? How many union leaders were killed? How many people's lands were confiscated? What percentage of the population does not have enough food for their family and have any medical treatment at all? So turn the camera around. You show me the skyscrapers. Are any regular people going to work in them or live in them? No. These are all owned by the multinationals. Now, turn your camera behind you and show me the ghettos. Show me the technocrats, the bureaucrats. Show me the people who function without consciousness because they're not allowed to have a conscience because you take care of enough of their basic needs and security, like an army. Why do you think in every single place in the world the first money for food goes to the army to protect those in power? Now, show me 98% of the population that live in poverty. Of course, he left that out, where their natural resources were exploited against the people's own benefit. He left that out. 171 times the United States has engaged officially in bringing democracy, freedom to other countries, all of which destabilize the countries. They went against their democratically elected officials. They went against any land reform. And land reform doesn't mean going in and taking all the precious possessions out of a rich person's home. That's not what it means. It means that if you own 2 million acres and you're using your home, then why don't you allow part of that property you're not using to be given back to the community that can then be resettled with people who can have gainful living? At one time they had that and you confiscated from them, indigenous cultures included. It's merely reutilizing resources to other people's benefit without taking away. I'm not advocating they come and take away someone's possessions. That's not the issue. The issue is take the resources we have and reapply them. Why don't in the United States we have a national mandate to get public education, public, not private education, back as a major issue? Why can't we give student loans without interest at all? Why do we have to have a bankruptcy law that doesn't allow a student who falls behind in their bank loans to declare bankruptcy? And why are we selling out the students' loans to private agencies that then have the power of law to arrest you, put you in jail because you didn't have enough money to pay your loan, or your father didn't have enough money, or your grandfather didn't? They're arrested. They're put into a debtor's prison, which is now in 27 states. All right? And now, every day they're in jail for not having the money to pay the student loan or even the interest on the student loan, they have to pay a private corporation that has privatized that part of the judicial system money to be in jail. Where exactly is someone supposed to come up with money? If they had the money to begin with, they would have paid the student loan or the interest. Instead, they're broke. So what do you do to a broke American? Well, if you're a corporatizer, you find a way to exploit poverty. You become a venture capitalist. And you go in and you say, you can't pay your loan? Here's your options. A, we don't care where you get the money. You get us the money with the compounding interest. B, we're going to arrest you if you can't. And suddenly, you got an old man who thought he was retired, who's now in prison. Why? Because it's his name on the legal document. And since he doesn't have money, then how's he supposed to get the money? But every day he's in jail, he compounds the fee. I know of one actual case where a $115 fine for a ticket ended up becoming a $5,000 penalty. And no one's looking at this? What has happened to us when we allow this, the privatization of our water, the privatization of our commons resources? Could you go through this, please?
Well, and on top of that, the call for essentially the privatization of federal public lands, this is a huge deal. State of Utah now, they passed legislation. They want to sue the federal government to get all the federal lands within the state turned over to the state, because what they want to do is sell them off to developers. These are our lands, the people's lands, and the same thing's happening, as you said, to our water resources. It's going to be the greatest problem in several parts of this country before too long. And we're going to wonder, really, they sold this off for development purposes to enrich the very few once again at the expense of the public? The only way to turn all of this around, the corrupting influence of money, this plutocracy, where our government at every level, city, state, federal, where it's all controlled by the very wealthy, the only way around that is not to sit back and wait for some legislator, McCain-Feingold bill to come along and somebody to lead out on this, because all the incumbents now know that they thrive on the system and they've got to play the game or they're going to be out of office. We have to demand it. We need to demand public financing of campaigns. We need to demand that the publicly owned airwaves are there for the people, and that every qualifying candidate gets equal and free time on those airwaves. That would be an amazingly democratized means, finally, of communicating to the people rather than having those candidates who are bought and paid for by these wealthy interests be the only ones that are heard from. On the presidential level, what happened to the presidential debates? Why aren't we hearing from the third-party candidates? You know, when Ross Perot participated the first time around in the debates, his numbers tripled. When Jesse Ventura, before the debates, when he was running for governor, he had 10% of support in the polls. He ended up winning the election because he was allowed to debate. Now, what happened in this country? League of Women Voters used to run those debates independently. They set the rules. They decided where they'd be held and when and what the format was going to be. You see now the Commission on Presidential Debates, and they've got this seal that looks like a governmental seal. I think everybody, most people think that it's either a governmental or quasi-governmental, some kind of independent commission. It was a sole creation of the Republican and Democratic parties. They put this together so they could control the debates, and they hijacked it away from the League of Women Voters.
Do you blame them? Only they could be heard.
Absolutely, I blame them. It's completely inimical to our democratic system,
to the public interest. It is, but ask yourself this. How do you think that either the Republican or Democratic candidate would do up against Jill Stein, Gary Johnson, or Rocky Anderson?
I think they would come out looking foolish.
Then they have to exclude you.
They don't have to. We shouldn't put up with it.
No, we
shouldn't.
Every
American, let me say this. It could start here, Gary. Every American ought to take a look at the sponsors of the presidential debates and not only say, we're not going to watch, we're also going to boycott your products. Because this
today,
is...
Today, Democracy Now! Just announced it's going to do a two-hour election campaign, from there. I don't believe either campaign should be covered at all. I believe they should be boycotted, all of it. Because once you step inside of their arena, no matter what you see, you're looking at them play their game. They've gamed the system. They're talking heads. They're experts. And now you're in effect, you're giving credibility to it. And I believe that you got one of two choices. A, you consciously find the other candidates out there who are independent and vote for one of them. Or B, you do not vote as a protest against what is being offered. But you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, you know, the lesser of two evils is still evil.
And Gary, I would never advocate that people don't vote. I strongly suggest everybody, register, get out and vote, and cast your vote for an alternative to this political duopoly. The Republicans and Democrats have completely betrayed our trust, the public interest, in every way possible. We talked about health care earlier. You won't hear either of these candidates talk about poverty. It was never raised. The word poverty didn't escape the lips of either of these, of the Democratic or Republican candidates last time around, or the representatives of the media acting as moderators during those debates. Not to discuss poverty when we have the highest poverty rate since 1965. Do you know there are two developed nations where children, the percentage of child poverty exceeds 20%? Do you know what those countries are? Romania and the United States of America. Among developed nations, the two worst countries for infant mortality, that is death during the first year of a baby's life. The worst is Latvia, the next to the worst is United States. And the same thing with regard to maternal mortality. We're one of the worst in the entire industrialized world. So you put that all together. Why is this? It's because we don't have access to health care. We're the only industrialized nation in the world where we don't have basic health care for all of our citizens. Now it's over 50 million people. Even after the Obama plan's put in place, 30 million people will still be without essential health care. It's a matter of life and death. We're the only nation in the entire industrialized world where this happens, and we're also the only nation in the industrialized world where people take out bankruptcy because of their medical bills. And over 700,000 bankruptcies a year.
It was number one for 7 years, and then after the housing crisis, it became number two reason. I know that you have to go to another appointment, and I'm going to get you out now. I'm going to wrap this up rather quickly, and I appreciate you spending the extra time with us. I'm going to ask you some rapid-fire yes and no, okay? I just need yes or no.
Let's go.
All right? If you were president, would you close down the American military-industrial complex around the world and curtail by at least 80%, which would save us about $1.2 trillion, that whole empire?
By 80%, are you talking about the military budget?
Yes.
I think it, clearly 50% yes to the rest of your questions.
Okay. If you needed scholarship to justify why everything else should be cut down to, except for $200 billion, every single paper we have done, scholars and residents here, shows to completely defend our country, we need no more than $200 billion.
And I think that's probably very close to the mark. What we're doing now is criminal, and it's not only criminal toward other peoples, but to the people of this country.
I agree.
Where we're missing all sorts of opportunities.
Would you set into motion an effort to go into the Middle East and the Balkans and any place we've used depleted uranium munitions and to identify the sicknesses, illnesses, environmental illnesses,
yes,
and try to clean it up and help the people?
Absolutely. And I do the same thing with landmines across the
world. Would you recognize the true causes of Gulf War syndrome and then help each and every one of those vets without charge to get their health back?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Would you deal with the 980,000 homeless vets in the United States and set up veterans camps around the United States, like tent cities with a, you know, with a mess hall and psychological counseling and places for families to reunite?
I wouldn't stick them in tents. I'd provide good housing for them. And we did that in Salt Lake City at the VA hospital.
Good.
For homeless vets.
But
I'm
just thinking in the short term, something you could do quickly that would at least get them out of harm's way where they're at now.
And I would also hold to a full accountability those who have misdiagnosed veterans with pre-existing personality disorders rather than PTSD.
That's a complete fraud. The whole idea that they had a pre-existing mental condition and they're dying is stupid. And yet that's what the VA is doing. Would you advocate for single health care providing service?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I've been an adamant proponent of that.
Would you try to get the profit motive out of medicine and health care?
Yes. We're the only nation in the industrialized world that depends on for-profit insurance companies for basic health care.
Would you take away corporate charters that shield corporate executives, board of directors from engaging in acts that, with malice aforethought or intent, did something that harmed the people or the environment and hold them personally accountable?
Yes, and that entails changing how we incorporate. Corporate charters ought to entail that kind of community responsibility.
All right. Would you demilitarize the police?
Yes.
Would you eliminate that stupid group of people, sorry for my prejudice, TSA, and their inability to do anything right?
You know, I got to disagree with you on part of that. There are really some great TSA people who, I mean, we need security in our airports, but the way that this has gone about, you can't blame the people on the line for it. You got to blame their higher-ups, and some of these decisions
have been absolutely outrageous.
Well, the whole system
needs to be changed completely.
I agree with that.
Also, would you challenge the GMO makers who are experimenting on the American public by allowing untested GMO products? There's never been a long-term study in existence.
It should be banned, and there should be full disclosure if a product is genetically modified. I'm outraged that I can't buy a cob of corn and not know whether it's GMO. And let me suggest this. I think there should be a popular movement in this country to boycott any company that doesn't voluntarily designate whether their product is genetically modified.
Would you raise the minimum wage to a living wage?
I would raise the minimum wage to at least $10 an hour, which would still be a bit below the equivalent of what it was in 1965.
Okay, I would suggest $12 an hour, but that's all right. Would you go through each and every bureaucracy with an independent group who are non-politically aligned and to determine the value of that bureaucracy, what it stands for, what we need from it, how it should be run, and therefore deconstruct them to the level that they're actually serving the American public instead of just these bloated cancers that they are now today?
Absolutely. And I think it ought to be you start from scratch and determine what is and isn't in the public
interest.
Terms of regulations. And I think in this instance, there are a lot of regulations that small businesses are facing that make it very difficult, and that equates to
lower employment.
Well,
I won't even get into my feelings that we should be supporting small businesses as the solution. I've already done the math on that.
Right.
I show where we could have 14 million jobs if we simply supported the small business people with the same interest, zero interest, that we do the Fed. Would you abolish or change the Federal Reserve?
It absolutely should be within the Treasury Department. We need elected officials fully accountable for what the Federal Reserve
does.
It's
a rogue
agency.
No
more of the secrecy, no more simply serving the criminal banks.
Would you actively stop all subsidies to the major multinational corporations in the United States? Big Agra, big banking. If they fail to do the business right, then let them fail like everyone else who goes into business. Okay, well, that's important, because if you're going to give them $1 trillion and Citigroup got $2.3 trillion, Bank of America got $2.6 trillion out of the funds from the Federal Reserve at 0.2 interest, and yet a small business person can't get a break.
And student loans, they're talking about doubling
would
the interest rate
them?
When Goldman Sachs ends up getting 0% interest.
And they're getting 800% profit they're making. Would you forgive all outstanding student interest?
No, not just across the board, but if there's been a good faith effort to pay with a certain percent of income over a certain period of time,
I'm not
then
talking
they
about
should
the loan.
Be forgiven.
I'm talking about the interest on
yes.
the loan.
Yes.
All right? If they made a loan, they're responsible for it.
Yeah.
I'm only talking about the usurious interest, because if Citibank is getting a zero interest, and now the student has got paying eight, that's 800% profit.
That's just my point.
Okay.
Exactly.
Would you go after the FDA and some of these agencies that are completely corrupted in the pocket and replace them with independent objective science?
Yes, and I wouldn't allow this revolving door where we bring people into the industries, the companies that are abusing the American people to run these agencies.
Would you deconstruct the entire system of 18 known secret agencies with unknown budgets estimated over $70 billion a year and stop the spying on the American public and violating our rights?
Of course I would.
Immediately upon taking office reestablish habeas corpus?
Yes, absolutely.
Would you open up our jails and let our political prisoners out?
I would grant pardons to every person in our prisons and jails that are there for simple possession of any drugs, and I would advocate...
Would you decriminalize the use of drugs?
Yes.
Good. Good for you. Well, that would you stop the privatization of America's resources? Meaning our water and our land.
Yes, of course.
Okay, our national parks
yes.
be exploited.
In fact, I testified in the only hearing since the bill was first proposed in 1989 for the Red Rock Wilderness Bill, and they're lined up against me testifying against the designation of wilderness
Good.
Preservation.
Then you become stronger
lands.
By the enemies you make.
That's right. And it was Republicans and Democrats together.
They are not
testifying
Republicans and Democrats. Rocky, we don't have true Democrats and Republicans in power. We have corporate Democrats and corporate Republicans, and they are an amalgamation of the worst of greed and insecurity. The historical and legitimate conservatives, I respect, and liberals, I respect, but those are long ago relegated to the sidelines of having influence. And finally, would you take a look at all of the corruption that's occurred within our Wall Street system and reenact laws to hold those people who engage in these illegal acts accountable for their actions?
You don't reenact laws for what the past acts are. Those are ex post facto laws. I would prosecute people under the laws that were in place because there was massive fraud, massive violations of laws that were in place at the time, and they got a free ride. They got basically de facto immunity by a president that 4 years ago took in more Wall Street contributions than anybody in this nation's history.
Okay. We didn't get to everything, but we got to a lot of things.
We covered a lot. Thanks a lot, Gary.
My guest, Rocky Anderson, he is the presidential candidate for the Justice Party. Their website is justicepartyusa.net. And you heard him answer the questions. My final thought, and then I'm going to go. I know you have to leave. I'm going to go to calls. I'm going to open it up to a lot of people listening. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. I'm staying in my studio in New York to take some of your calls. Rocky, here's my hope. My hope is that you and all of the independent candidates will put so many outstanding ideas out there before the American public that you will create the platform that will unite us all. I'm looking forward to after this election cycle, because can't do anything before then except support one of you, and that's my hope. But then I want to see all of the progressive minds come together. I want to see Jesse Ventura, who I spoke with on this, and Ralph Nader, and Ron Paul. And, you know, there's some things I disagree with Ron Paul, absolutely. But, boy, when he and I see eye to eye, you're looking at a lot of things that you just said yes to that he says yes to. All right? And Gary Johnson, there are things on the libertarian side. I believe it lacks a humanistic base. I believe you have to look at things from a humanistic and spiritual point of view.
Or environmental protection.
Yes. And so you eliminate those things you disagree upon, or you agree to disagree upon them. But then you say, what can we agree upon? And you take in Jill Stein, and you start taking, and then you bring in other people who are not political, but who are phenomenally insightful on solutions. And there are about 5,000 of those that I personally know. We call them conversations with remarkable minds when we have them on the show. Now, you start creating a colloquium of ideas, and you start realizing how many people you have there. Ron Paul alone, you got 10 to 12 million young idealist people. From each one, you have groups. Now you create one group that works together. You surrender the egos that are at the door. You understand that you're not going to agree upon everything, but you look at what's in the interest of the American people. Peace on earth, that's important. Demilitarization, that's important. Denuclearization, that's important. Feeding the people around the world, that's important. Regaining a sense of integrity over the environment, so you work with the environment where it at least hasn't tipped yet. That's important. When you stop making the American people feel like they're terrorists for speaking up and standing out, and you regain them their constitutional rights, you reestablish all the Bill of Rights, then all those people who are considered nut jobs and cast aside by the left, forget the right, by the left. Oh, they're, you know, they want, you know, they no, they're just people who are impassioned by something. And why don't you look at what they're impassioned before you criticize them? But this demonization of whole blocks of the American public who don't fit into this nice little, I will not think independently. I will not criticize you, no matter how horrendous your crimes against humanity. I will simply be there. Then you're looking at 50% of the American population would support that.
I think you're right, and it could be better than that. The polls show that the majority of people in this country want to see a major third-party or independent candidate. We see a historic low 10% approval rating of Congress. The polls show that the vast majority of people feel that this country is going down the wrong track, and we're seeing millions of people leaving the Republican Democratic parties and more people identified as independents than either Republicans or Democrats. This is a movement that's just waiting to happen,
but
Gary.
It has to unite with multiple voices.
Indeed.
We're one big choir.
Yep.
Jim, last year, there was a guy on who did something unique over the internet. He played a song. I think it was Stand By Me, you know, the old soul song. Mm-hmm. But he had people in every part of the world, in every village and place, playing something in that song. And then he edited it so it was just showing you the whole world singing together. And then they did another one this year that was wonderful, showing people dancing. And I think it was Red Square in Russia. A few people started, and the bystanders didn't know this was all choreographed, right? But like 1,000 people suddenly were out there all dancing. I'm saying that we have the truth on our side, and we will have history on our side. Not today, but we will. If we're patient and we come from a spiritual place and not an insecure ego place, we will be able to have single term, no money in any campaign, no lobbyist. The public is the only person who should be allowed to lobby. We should have a form with public oversight. We've just allowed it all to be corporatized. When you allow the government to be corporatized, it becomes privatized. And then all we are commodities.
And the only way we're going to accomplish this is if the American people come together and we all provide the leadership.
That's what I'm asking for.
Thank you, Gary.
I just want people to know that your vote counts. And when you vote, I would say if we had no third-party candidates, then don't vote. Because I will never vote for the lesser two evils. But our vote does count. And we have some outstanding candidates. It is for you to decide which one you believe you're in greater alignment with. And don't just look at what your vote means for them in each state today, because their truth will be tomorrow's truth. And their voice that's alone today will be a unified voice in the future. That I'm sure of.
And can I mention just very quickly, my website is voterocky.org. I think people will find it very, very substantive on the issues and in terms of my record of accomplishment. I really urge people to take a look at that website. And
VoteRocky.com?
VoteRocky.org.
Oh, VoteRocky.org and JusticePartyUSA.net. Rocky, thank you very much for spending almost an hour with us.
Thank you, Gary.
And I believe that just we needed to touch on this. That's why I invited you to stay extra. I know you've made some sacrifices in your schedule. I appreciate that. We're going to go to music for a moment. Then we're going to come back and take on the people's issues. We have a segment of our program called Talk Back. And call 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. The rest of the program is over to you. And I'm going to see Rocky out, and I'll be back in 60 seconds with your calls.
Thank you.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go to our phones now. Phones are going to be open for you. Let's say hello first to Flory in Florida. Hi, Flory. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for the show. Thank you so much for interviewing this candidate and for all what you share. I have learned a lot from you through the years. And also, it's so refreshing to hear what you're doing with the veterans, with the help and the film that you made. And I just wanted to mention about the food school, the school that they feed the kids, what they give them. I was trying to make a change on the charter school where my child goes. And I was trying to engage moms to make a change. Couldn't get nowhere because they were happy that at least they were getting the kosher food. And it was a useless effort, and I actually send food to my kids from home. She doesn't touch the food at school, and I am amazed how there is no way to get through the system. At least I don't have the tools to do that.
Okay, hold on. You're just telling me the problem. Here's your solution. In Newark, New Jersey, there is a charter school run by the Gray Charter School by Verna Gray. Give her a call. She will write a letter or speak with any charter school anywhere in America about the success of turning around her children, the teachers, and the parents' health within 6 months of making healthy lifestyle modifications. And so that's easier for her as the head of a successful charter school to show what it did to the grades, the study habits, diabetes, heart disease, all interrelated. So that's your solution. Verna Gray, Newark, New Jersey. Ralph from New York City. Hi, Ralph. You're on.
Hi, Gary. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Great interview, by the way. I had a question. I know you've been talking about peak water a lot. And I was just wondering, I mean, I was in the service for 4 years in the Navy. We were on a carrier, and we were self-sufficient, basically, for water. We used big evaporators, and basically desalination of the ocean water. And I was wondering why this wouldn't be a viable solution for, running out of water, and also if, interest in big companies trying to privatize would have influence on this solution or possible solution as well.
Okay, you've made two important points. Let me focus upon the first. It is not the bottling of the water or the purification of the water that's the issue. It is who owns the surface rights and the mineral rights. The surface rights include mineral rights, water rights. So if someone owns the water rights to the aquifer that feeds a community or a city, then they can charge anything they want for the water. Even if they just have it come out of your tap, they can put a meter on. You'll have to pay them. Or they can bottle it. Or they can bottle a water and they can sterilize it. They can take it through reverse osmosis. But that's up to them. Now, try to get your water rights back. You can't. So my suggestion is that we should be looking now, at least those of us who care about such issues, of purchasing land individually or in small groups where you have water. I took 5 years to buy one particular piece of land because I couldn't get the mineral rights to it. And the person would argue, well, they're never going to drill here. I said, they may not, but what if they decide to? The law is written now where if you build a beautiful home on a piece of idyllic and bucolic land and you're in Colorado or New Mexico and you're looking out over miles and miles of beautiful forest and virgin trees, they could come right next to your house and put an oil well or gas well. That's the law on their side. So don't buy land unless you have 100% control of the minerals. That's one thing. And then look for water. And look for water with deep tables and Jurassic water. And that exists. but not in a lot of places. And most of the people are concentrated in areas like Phoenix and Las Vegas and Los Angeles and San Diego and Houston that do not have adequate aquifers. They're running out of water. And it'll happen now, especially as we're hitting drought. And the drought is caused by global warming. The global warming is overheating the mountains. The mountains are not having the snowpack. Without the snowpack, you don't get the runoff water over a six-month period. As a result, you're having less water that is able to get into the aquifer systems. So that's a problem that has to be dealt with. And we're not doing anything about it at all. Okay, thanks, Ralph. I appreciate your call. Let's say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. I got a couple of emails from people today that is speaking to this recent report we heard that Lance Armstrong was being stripped of all seven of his titles, winning the Tour de France. And basically, Lance Armstrong feels that this has been a witch hunt. It's destroyed his family. It's destroyed his projects, and he's just giving up. He's just saying, "I'm tired of it." The blood, results show that I wasn't doping, and yet the doping team feels that they're very, strong again about the fact that he was doping. And I know it's a huge effort to win a race, and you know that, and I know that. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on this whole debacle?
I wouldn't look at it in that way, and I have no right to suggest that he was or was not doping. Until he has been proven in a court of law where he's had an opportunity to testify under oath, and those who are challenging him testify also under oath, then it's speculation. And therefore, honoring the principle of not being guilty until you're found guilty, then I have to assume that whatever his motives are, they're his motives. So I won't challenge that like everyone else is doing. Luann, did you receive an email about some state and national and world records recently, just in the 3,000 meter that someone had sent? Because they sent it to me too, and I saw that your name was on a list of gazillion people they sent it to. I don't know why, but I didn't have any of that stuff because I don't keep any of that. Go back and ask yourself, why would someone do a race to begin with? Competitive race. We're not talking about going out and working out or having a strong workout. Like my brother Steve, he barrels around the park. It's not because he's out there winning records. It's because he's constantly challenging himself. When we run together, that's what we do. We challenge ourselves. Not a single one of those world, national, and local and state records that still are in existence. That's what they sent it for. Oh, by the way, Gary, here's all these records just in the 3,000 meter. You also have records in the 1 mile, the 1,500, the 5, the 10, the 15, the 20, the 25, the 30, the 40, and the 50Ks. How many? I have no idea. But not once did I ever race to get an award, or benefit from it, or get a sponsorship, or an endorsement, or to commodify and commercialize that success. I remember once Franco Pantone, my running buddy, until he retired from running, great athlete, one of the best coaches ever. We were buzzing around the park sometimes doing 100 miles of training a week and at a very fast pace. Then we would do running up and down the steps of my building 25 times nonstop. That was 22 floors. Then working 2 hours on a verse climb. It started about 3 o'clock in the morning, went to almost 10 o'clock every day, so that when we did the national competitions, like the pin relays, there wouldn't be an excuse. Because Franco one time said to me, when we finished a race, and he said, "Man, if only I would have done harder training, I could have caught that guy." And I said, "Okay, you lost by 2 seconds in a 10K race. 2 seconds. So now you're going to do training like it counts?" He said, "Yes." And he did, to his word. And when we would go into a race, we went without any excuses. Now, when we finished the race, And I don't remember once in 15 years where we didn't win. We didn't even go and pick up the medals. Didn't go to the award ceremony. What we did was we went back out on the track and encouraged and cheered on the other athletes. And then went over to them afterwards to talk about what kind of good race they did. That's what I believe real athleticism is. Now change that today. You're Lance Armstrong. Lance's name came up about 2 weeks ago that he was trading in his $35 million private jet for a better one. But a whole group of people were trading up, and their jets that they had owned for a short period of time had dropped tremendously in value. And I remember reading this thinking, why in the world would someone who has a $30 million jet have to trade up, what, to a $40 or $50 million private jet? Where are you going to fly in the world that that private jet is going to be better than flying, let's say, first class or business class, where you got, great seats? And it's the idea you can, but it's also why you're racing. You're racing for the gold. He raced to win and immediately had an entire team of people exploit his win. Publicist, exclusive interviews, and lining up the sponsorship, which could be $10 to $100 million a year. So therefore, whether he enjoyed the sport or not, whether he wanted to stay in it or not, became secondary to the financial needs, because he built a lifestyle. He built an overhead based upon having to win. When you need to win, then you lose the capacity to enjoy what you're doing. It's not coming from a spiritual and authentic place of improving against yourself, challenging yourself, because you're challenging your agent. And let me tell you how this works and why I didn't watch most of the Olympics. I take nothing away from the athletes and their extreme training, but I absolutely challenge everything about the Olympics and all the official sports in the world today that have been corrupted at every level. Here's how it works. You have scouts. The scouts go into grade schools, junior high schools, and in all the important sports like tennis, baseball, gymnastics, football, they look for and scout for that exceptional talent, someone who's naturally gifted. Then the person is given an offer. The parents are given a nice sum of money, plus the promises that their child is going to get special training, special coaches, the world's greatest coaches in that field. And they're going to have expenses paid, food paid for, their education for their kid paid for. And then you look at your circumstances, and let's say you're a poor person from Nigeria, or you're just a middle-class person from Brazil, but you're going to be a middle-class person like your parents. And now someone says, no, you're not going to be middle class anymore. You're going to be wealthy. You're going to be famous. And we have the capacity to make you that. And you say, okay, what do you get? Well, we get 40% of all income plus the deduction of all expenses. So everything that we give you for training, housing, food, transportation, the coaches, all that is a deduction. So it comes to about 70%. Depending upon the person. But it still makes you a lot of money, because we control the meets. We control the venues. We control who's invited. So you think, wow, that's pretty good. So now a good baseball player, but not great, and a good soccer player, but not great, is given all the advantages that no one else is given. But they gave up their independence in the process. And now they are worked, because they're no longer a human being, they're a machine. They're both a physical machine that must be brought up to its highest level. And for decades, any legitimate athlete knows all the athletes who were cheating. We know about Barry Bonds, he's a fraud. We know about McGuire, we know about all the other ones, Sammy Sosa, and how they suddenly beat, everyone was suddenly beating Babe Ruth's records. No one should be allowed to have an asterisk after their records. They should be wiped from the books. Then you wouldn't have so many athletes. But then to get it to be a big-time athlete, you had to be paid big-time money. Show me the money. And now you're getting big checks. And for that, you have to perform. And one day you say to your agent, hey, man, between the coke I'm doing at night and all the booze and all the partying, I just don't have the desire to go out there. And the agent said, what, are you crazy? Do you realize how much you made last year? I got you your signing bonus. I got all this stuff for you and your endorsements. We've got twice as much coming in endorsements as you've got coming in your salary. You stop playing the game today, football, soccer, basketball, you're forgotten because there's 1,600 other people in your field who are retired. Now they're selling insurance. Is that what you want? You want to be a maitre d' at one of the nightclubs? Is that what you want? No. Okay, we'll get your head out of the Coke bowl long enough and let's talk. You're a commodity. You're Tiger Woods. You're worth over $1 billion. Yeah, you're stupid, and everyone in the field knew what you were doing. There were no secrets. There never are. But you're worth to us about $2 to $3 billion. We value that. So we can clean up the mess of your reputation. We can whitewash anything. Don't worry about that. People forgive you. And as long as you get back in there, you're only as valuable as your performance. So which athletes are going to say, well, I don't have it anymore. I'm not 21 anymore. Okay, so take some growth-stimulating hormone. Take some anabolic steroids. We have different ways of getting it into your body. You can test okay. And now a whole other scheme comes into mind that you have to have the advantage, the edge. And that's how they perform. I mean, most of them perform this way. Not all. And historically, none of them performed that way. If you were Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays, if you were Elgin Baylor or Hot Rod Hundley or Bob Cousy or Jesse Owens, or you performed because you were unique and you mastered it. You didn't have any endorsements and you didn't have people behind you. And you went back to the same neighborhood that you'd lived in your whole life after each game and each performance. And you stopped and you loved the kids and you signed their mitts or their basketballs or baseballs because you were a decent human being. We don't have decent athletes today, with rare exception. We have the cokeheads, we have the drug addicts, we have the people who want to get as much sex as they can. And gee whiz, wonder what kind of person's going to want to have sex with you when you're famous and rich. What, they forget about character development? Yeah. And then we look for the crash and burn. So when you commodify something and you commercialize it and people don't know the people behind the whole scene who are controlling the whole field, these are the product and career managers. They don't get 10%. They get 40 to 50%. By the time they're finished, they're the ones who make out. And when you no longer have a purpose, you become a goodwill ambassador, that, like a Michael Jordan. You'll still make some money, but you won't make $36 million a year. As long as you keep your reputation clean, as long as people like you, you'll get endorsements. You make some mistakes, like Brett Favre, you won't. But then you build up a big lifestyle and you're thinking, holy heck, I bought houses all over. I got a private jet. I got all this expenses. I have this foundation, this charity. How can I don't have the money. Maybe initially they'll give you some advanced money, but these people are great white sharks. They're vultures. As they built you up, going up that ladder, knowing full well what you were doing to compete and stay at the high end of your game, they're going to exploit when you're going down until you're finally out the door. And they will never be known. How do you think people get their drugs? You think they just walk into a drugstore and say, I'm a great athlete, I need some drug enhancement drug? No. And it's never secret. So then what good would it be being the great athlete if you didn't do it from the heart and for good reasons? You did it for the money, you did it for the fame. The fame gives you money, your celebrity gives you fame, and then you can exploit that as money. The money buys you a lifestyle. The lifestyle has to be maintained, and like anything has to be maintained, you have to keep feeding it. And then one day, you're burned out. And one day, it's over. And one day, you'll only be remembered because you took a shortcut, you cheated. So you still have your possessions, but that won't last because you're not going to have any more endorsements. And you can't downsize to what it was before because there's a certain expectation of celebrity living a certain life. And by the time they finally figure out that it's all an illusion, all image, and they try to cash out, they've lost everything. And then they end up in a bar out in Malibu that a buddy of mine, who was one of the most famous, if not the most famous, publicist in Hollywood for 30 years, he was one who helped manage careers, produce films. He did it all. Neil Koningsberg was my buddy, and I gave him the $3,000 stake to go to Hollywood to begin with. And you look into a bar, and there are all these people that used to be famous, athletes, movie stars, and they're all broke. And they're there commiserating about what a bad world it is. It's not a bad world. They're just bad choices we make. And today, how can I support the Olympics when you have $100 million basketball players competing against amateurs who've never had an advantage or a special coaching session or anything in their life? Since when is this true amateurs on a level field playing against each other? It's a fraud. How can you have someone who's been trained and by the best coaches and nurtured and everything taken care of for 20 years competing against someone who is just coming in from the backwoods and trying the best they can? So if you want to have an Olympics, then just have either an Olympics where you go back to the original spirit of the Olympics back in the 19-teens, 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s, or you have only those people who are professional athletes compete against each other. Otherwise, trying to mix the two is an embarrassment. And that's what we become. Then watch how quickly it's all about the gold. It's never about the integrity of the athlete in the sport. It's about how many medals you win and how much money you're going to make. Well, Mr. Phillips will make $44 million this year. Yeah, isn't he also a chronic gambler? Yeah, but he's got the money to gamble. Today he does. That lifestyle he's living, it could just be one big mistake. The money stops. What are you going to do then? Become a lifeguard at Jones Beach? Man, you don't realize how quick and out of it you can go when you start making stupid life choices. But nobody pays attention to that when you're up on the podium and everyone's praising you and you've been made into something other than what you are. And then you try to live on that. And that's how we end up with Lance Armstrongs. Does that answer your question, Noanne?
It sure does. And how is that any different from what you just spoke about in the first hour? It sounds like the same picture of our politicians and how they've been bought out and how they're in it for the money. It's all an illusion.
You should fire every single politician in Washington, Albany, and every state legislature, every city council, Quinn. All these people are just compromised beyond belief. They are the worst of human nature, the most compromised of human nature, and yet these are the ones that had the most power over us. That's why I said, don't blame Bill O'Reilly or Glenn Beck. They're just fools. They're buffoons. They're caricatures of a human being. Look at their audience. That's who you should fear. That's where the problem is. Don't look at the candidates. They're a genetic mutation. All right? Look at the people who would believe in them. That's what's scary. You know something? If Barack Obama were angry, he would never have been elected. We don't allow angry blacks, Latinos, or Caucasian to get elected to anything. Anger means there's passion. And passion means there may be a commitment to a higher ideal when something is so wrong that you feel compelled to speak out on it. We want someone who's always even-tempered. That makes us feel good about ourselves. That's how bad it is. That's how far we've slipped. Luann, we're out of time. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.
Sunshine, blue skies, please go away. A girl has found another and gone away. With her went my future. My life is filled with gloom. So day after day, I stay locked up in my room. I know to you, it might sound strange, but I wish it would rain.